Just before we get started, the Second Act Podcast would like to acknowledge that we are recording this podcast on Treaty 7 land inhabited by the Blackfoot Nations. This includes the Siksika, Piikani, and Kainai. We would also like to acknowledge the Tsuut'ina and Stoney Nakoda First Nations, as well as the Métis Nations and all people who make their home on Treaty 7 land in southern Alberta. But now that we've paid respects to people that were here before us, let's start the pod.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Second Act Podcast, and today's guest is Gideon Foster.
Gideon comes to us with a great story. He had he calls it a spiritual awakening in his mid-40s, and he realized that the path he was on wasn't it for him, but he wasn't overly musical before he decided to try his hand as a singer-songwriter. It's actually a really incredible conversation.
Yeah, and I just enjoy, like, the concept of spiritual awakenings are always so interesting to me because everyone seems to have a different story with them. Some people, maybe it's something a little bit more self-conscious. Some people believe it's an external force, and it's just an incredible concept. And whether it was Gideon self-conscious, knowing that he wasn't happy doing what he's doing, or an external force that pushed him in the right direction, it is a big swap for him from what he was doing before to that music singing and songwriting piece, and it's an incredible plot.
Yeah, a lot of fun to sit down and talk with Gideon. Had a couple of stops and starts with him. We were able to nail it down. Had a great no rush conversation, which is always nice when you're getting down to the wire. We just recorded this Saturday morning. He lives in London, so things had to align, but align they did. So check it out. Join us welcoming Gideon Foster.
No, thanks for having me on. Thank you.
Really exciting to sit down and talk to somebody who's decided after, you know, you were in your 40s when you kind of decided that what you were doing wasn't filling your cup. And and now you've had a pretty good run. It's been 10 or so years. Really excited to sit down and talk to somebody who's got some experience in their second act and can talk a little bit about what goes in to make those decisions for a big change. And then the hard part. Okay, now I've made this change. I got to follow through on it.
Yeah, exactly. That is like the leap of faith, and then you're like, what have I done? But no, I mean it was kind of very sudden for me. It was something I'd never planned. I had a spiritual awakening in my mid-40s in about 2014, I think now. Which was something I've never sought. I've never been spiritual. I've never been religious. It just happened out of the blue. And kind of life just changed from there, really. It's kind of all, you know, the old life all kind of fell away and disintegrated. And music kind of came as quite a surprise to me, to be honest, because it's something I've always been musical. Not so much in terms of making music, more as a consumer of music. I mean, I was kind of played classically when I was younger. And there's always kind of been a guitar hanging around in the house, but I spent, obviously, you know, 25, 30 years distracted by something else and never really touched it, really, until I think sometimes when you kind of get to middle age, you kind of pick up these things again sometimes. I think you kind of get back in touch with things that used to give you pleasure when you're younger, and it really came about through that. But I never really kind of writing songs came as a great surprise to me, to be honest. It was this series of events that I really felt like it was kind of like life guided me that way without me consciously knowing that was what I wanted to do, if that makes sense. It was kind of what seemed like kind of, you know, obstacles and accidents at the time turned out to lead to me actually writing my own stuff.
Well, and I think there's a part of everyone's life where when you're younger, you don't always have the opportunity to kind of listen to yourself and what you want to do. You're doing things to... You know, you're told this is what you do. So you go to university, or you get a job, you get a trade, and you, in the back of your mind, you might be have a nagging kind of feeling that this isn't it for you, but this is what you do. And then you get to a point where you're successful enough, or you maybe have a little bit of breathing room in your life, that voice, that nagging feeling kind of becomes a little more prominent. But then at that point, you still have to make the conscious decision, or I guess maybe you don't. You talked about your spiritual awakening. Why don't you tell us a little bit about maybe what you were doing before the spiritual awakening and how that kind of came into play?
And it came as a great surprise to me, because it's something I've never really sought. I've never been religious, particularly. I've read about stuff. But I think sometimes you kind of realize you can make sense of things a lot better kind of looking backwards than you can actually at the time. And I realized that I've always had this kind of intrinsic ability to be able to kind of either just listen to music or kind of switch off, literally just staring out of a window. I used to spend a lot of time traveling up and down to London with work, and you know, it was kind of 3 hours on a train either way, and I just kind of, I thought that was bliss, because I could just switch off and stare at the clouds out the window and look at the view, and people would say, like, what are you thinking about? And I'd be going, like, well, nothing, you know. And everybody would be like, you can't be thinking,
right?
Like, but yeah, and I realized kind of after the event, I mean, there were a few things, and it kind of, I think with hindsight, I realized that was kind of my meditation, but it was never, you know, like an intentional meditation. And the other thing that kind of happened, which was quite bizarre when I had the awakening, was that I'd always had these kind of dreams from being a young age, really, from being a teenager. And one of them was being, I used to kind of drift off in my sleep, and I'd find myself on this place on a kind of cliff edge, looking down at the sea. And there was kind of like this amphitheater building with a black and white chessboard floor. And I always wondered, like, this was a place I didn't know where it was, what it was, what it signified. And then the night I had the kind of awakening, which is kind of like, it's a strange thing for people who kind of don't know. I mean, I didn't know about it. It wasn't until after the event that I realized what had happened. It was through talking to other people, but you kind of just out of nothing have this kind of burst of energy. I was like, I was thinking, what the hell was that? You know, I thought I just died. It's like, but you know, if I haven't, sorry, you still watch TV, the TV's still on. And but I turned to the TV, and there was this, and it was literally like, it was a drama on television that I haven't been particularly paying attention to. Anyway, it was a cliff looking down on a bay with a woman on this black and white chessboard floor on the seafront. It's like, wow, this is the dream I've kind of had for 25 years. And it still didn't make sense. I mean, it could be just coincidental. It's all belief. But yeah, I thought, and eventually that became a song. That was kind of Prophecy, which was a song. It was about it was an imaginary place, but I found myself then looking at where this place was, and it turns out it had been filmed in a place called Scarborough, which is kind of North Yorkshire towards the coast. And it wasn't until years afterwards, where my grandmother, who is actually had died about 10 years ago now. And apparently, but we'd never talked about it. It was actually a dream she'd had all her life. She used to kind of go on holiday when she was young, and I never knew about it until I kind of spoke to my mother about this in recent years, really. So it's a funny thing, really, but it all started from there, which was basically the whole process is kind of just tearing down everything that you believe was certain before it happens. And as I say, I mean, the music was really it very much seemed like an accident, really. I kind of started playing guitar again in my kind of 30s, but I was like messing around, and I never saw myself as writing songs, and I thought, well, I'd like to be able to sing. or I'd like, you know, somebody who could kind of show you how to kind of sing. So I ended up doing, I recorded a cover version of a Radiohead song. And then kind of after the Awakening, when kind of life had kind of fallen apart to a certain extent, I was on my own. I thought, well, you kind of look around for things to fill your time with. And I kind of went back to this place and said, I'd like to. Any chance of kind of doing some more of this? And anyway, the lady who ran it was, oh, wait, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm just running like a recording studio. So kind of on the spot, I said, oh, well, I'll write some songs. Having never written a song, and that was it, really. I just kind of sat down and started writing these songs, and via these kind of, you know, weird chance meetings with people, it's kind of progressed from there, really. But that's, I think that's what you do in the end. You kind of, you know, you realize, I don't think you're always entirely sure where you're going, but if you trust that it's, you know, somewhere that's going to be fun and then enjoy the process of going wherever you're going, you are blind to a certain extent. I've just done that. That's how it came about.
Well, that it's an interesting story because one of the things that I have written down, so I listened to a bunch of your songs and you know, there's like it's funny because your most playful sounding song is Fatal Kiss. So it's got this,
yeah,
this title that is very ominous, and then you listen to the song and it's really not like a lot.
It's yeah.
Well, it's just it's interesting how you got to that point, because it doesn't sound like you had a lot of people coaching you how to write music.
Literally Fatal Kiss is, I mean, I always love to think people can interpret things as they wish, really, because everybody finds different meanings and everything. But Fatal Kiss really isn't a kind of relationship thing. It's really about the kind of, the Fatal Kiss was the kind of Awakening, you know, or it seemed so at the time. I'm thinking, like, what the hell is happening? Like, my life is falling apart.
Yeah.
And it's kind of that. But looking back, you know, I kind of see it now. It's probably the biggest blessing that ever happened in my life, really. To find something that you were kind of capable of doing that you'd obviously just, life had got in the way of you doing that for so long. You know,
I think the like a lot of your music sounds very introspective. You don't sing about, you know, Jack and Diane at the Tasty Freeze. You know, sing about things that are, you sing in the first person and you know, yeah, things. And that was my kind of takeaway was your songs don't sound like you went to a songwriting camp and people said, oh, look at this for inspiration and a sunrise and the clouds. All of this sounds like it was inside of you. And in your previous life, you just didn't have the situation to allow that to come out. And that's what I'm hearing in your music all along.
No, I'm glad you get it. Cause it is, you know, I've kind of, I going back to the kind of Awakening business, I thought, like, what happens now? Because suddenly I'm in this kind of very spiritual world. And I even thought about joining the monastery at one time. That was because, you know, you get into this state of, like, I can't be around people. I can't be around the world in the world anymore. And then all these things happen. But I think eventually you come back from that. You realize that even you know, spirituality, which questions every belief in the world and says, you know, you're all wrong at this and the other world. I'm sorry, but even spirituality is just a subjective belief at the end of the day. And you kind of, you know, eventually you integrate back into life. I thought, like, well, what do I do with this? And then I kind of sat down and wrote. I had obviously been making songs, and I then sat down and thought, right, well, like, the elephant in the room is kind of the Awakening. So I kind of sat down and I wrote the album based very much based around that. I mean, prophecy was the kind of dream that I've had all my life. Cross the Stream is another imaginary place where, you know, I kind of used to go as a kid. And I thought, yeah, well, you know, what do? You write about, that's my way of expressing it. You know, I've kind of largely done it all by myself. I've been on my own for 9 years. With, you know, not a great deal in my life going on apart from music and, you know, a few friends and fresh air, which is not a bad way to be, to be honest. But people, some people look at it and think, you know, God, that's hell. But it's...
Well, and it's kind of like, if you have too much of that other stuff going on, does it cloud what you're trying to do artistically? I don't know. I don't know. I'm not an artist, but I'm thinking at some point, that part of your life is focused on the creation, the life of creation. And, yeah. You know, I don't know this, but you see a lot of artists that when they're in that situation, create this great art and people really connect to it. And then things start to get a little noisier in their life. And maybe yeah. The vision, the thing that made them connectable, gets a little cloudy or muddied, and then they become less and less. And then it becomes, well, they're so-and-so. They're U2. Everybody's going to buy a U2 album. You know, they haven't released anything worth listening to in 25 years, but they're U2. People are going to go to the Sphere and see them. You know, maybe it's like that where, and you're fortunate in this kind of run that you've had where you've been able to create the things that were aching to get out of you in that previous life.
I think so. Yeah, no, I think you're right. It's you know, for me, it was a real blessing really to be able to, you know, I found it hard to start with because I've always been used to having kind of a lot going on around me, and suddenly that was all a bit alien. So as much as I kind of enjoyed my own company, it felt like you're kind of placed into this bubble, this situation where you kind of don't really have any choice over it anymore. You've got to do it. There's something inside us saying, you know, this is something you've got to do. And so yeah, it's kind of bittersweet. I think now I'm at a stage now where I can actually cope with both. But I think for quite a long time after, I wasn't, you know, it had to be kind of peace and quiet and creating things, which I think was necessary for me to actually do it. But now I do a bit more. I'm not quite as kind of focused on it, on being in that space, because it's nice to have the, I think you can have too much of that as well. You know, you can be in a space where if it's all that, you kind of kill the inspiration, and you kill the, that kind of, you can kind of make that space somewhere that you don't really want to be. So it's I try to kind of mix it up a bit.
So along that same line, what's it like now when you have fans and you have people that are, you know, paying to come and see you, and you meet people after, and you know, you're in that mode where you're kind of a lone wolf doing the creation. And now, after all of the hard work, the thing that you wanted people to hear it and appreciate it is happening, and these people are bringing that energy back to you. What's that like, especially after a period of, you know, your career where fans weren't a thing, right?
No, exactly. And I'll say, you know, I'm just glad that people connect with it. I think, you know, nothing pleases me more than somebody saying, oh, you know, really, you know, I really got the message in that. Because I think I've made music that hopefully has tried to ask some questions as well. And I think it's nice. I mean, I don't think it's ever going to be the most popular thing in the world, because it's not conventionally what, you know, music is. As we said before, you know, music can be very, you know, it's kind of boy meets girl and summarizes and all this kind of thing. And I've kind of tried to consciously steer away from that. But yeah, I think it's great when you find somebody who connects with it. And I've had, you know, a couple of instances where people have said, you know, it's really helped them as well. a guy who'd been coming off drug use, and said, you know, kind of one of your songs kind of really got me through listening to it, because I found, you know, I found it very calming. I forget which song it was. You know, I think things like that, you realize, yeah, you think, you know, it's kind of, it's a thing worth doing at the end of the day. If that, you know, because at the end of the day, we're trying to share it for other people as well, really.
We're about the same age. I'm in my late 40s, and yeah, the idea of working in music meant albums, like long form albums, cassette tapes, two sides, 12 songs. Yeah. And in your career, you've written really one album and then some singles and EPs, and that's kind of the way the music business is going. Do you write your music as individual ideas, or two or three songs that could fit together in a release? Or are you like taking an album that's mapped out in your head and breaking it up as in order to match the consumption of the way the music is done these days?
I used to write, when I first started doing, I just kind of wrote songs. And to be perfectly honest with you, my original intention was, literally, I thought I've always wanted to make an album of songs. And I kind of never really saw anybody wanting to listen to it. It was just something that I thought I'd like to do for myself, even if it was just me having the CD of these 11, 12 songs. And I kind of fell into this world of, you kind of put a song out and everybody, and there's so much noise out there nowadays. You've got to have content, you've got to have this, you've got to be posting all the time on social media and all this. And you think, well, do you? Or is that, you know, that's just your opinion, it's somebody's opinion. And I thought, really, when there came a stage where I thought, I've never actually made this album, which was the original kind of idea. And then along came all the lockdowns and COVID, and I thought, well, this is a chance. So I kind of sat down and I wrote the whole album. And I've just written another one. So yeah, I've gone from writing song by song to trying to write something as a concept for the whole. The album I'm kind of doing at the moment, which there's actually a song out from it called Outside Looking In, is really probably a follow-up to Prophecy, in so much as I think it's not necessarily about the awakening, but perhaps where I am now and where I see the state of the world. It's like the sequel.
When you're looking back on, you know, from when you decided to break out and do this, obviously you mentioned COVID and just the change in your life and then the change in the world. What's different about, you know, maybe what you thought it was going to look like when you were, you know, it was a man and his guitar and you were going to go try this and there was a bunch of changes and learnings just from changing your life. And then COVID happened. And I mean, now I found you through, you know, music publicists. You're actually like, you have people working on your behalf. Can you talk about that and what's gone into it, what you thought it was going to look like and what it's actually looked like?
That's all. Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether I really, I try not to have expectations really to a certain extent. So I'm a very kind of open person, so I just kind of trust that the right things will come along. And Eric listened to it, to the album, and kind of emailed me and said, you know, I really like this, can I do something with you with publishing PR? I'm a great believer in, I think the path you kind of follow after what happened to me is kind of trust life to bring the opportunities your way rather than being reliant on your kind of your ego, for want of a better word, for your sense of knowing, like, I'm gonna go this way, and you kind of trust that life will throw the right opportunity in your direction. And I just thought, yeah, things like that, they are the things I follow, really. It's quite a change. I think beforehand I don't think I realized how much you have to kind of sell it. I think I thought he kind of, you know, he'd probably make a song, people listen to it, and they'll either like it or they won't. So I didn't realize, you know, it's like, music is really, it's an asset, like anything else, really. It's like, you know, and you've got to go out to the world and say, hey, you know, look at this.
Yeah.
People won't necessarily come and knock on your door and say, you know, oh, so you're making some music, kind of listen to it. You know, you've actually got, there is a kind of a business side to it as well, which, you know, if there was something that I didn't see, it's probably that. Yeah, I'm kind of finding my way there by trial and error, really. Mostly error, but I think it is.
Well, and I think that part that you just mentioned about selling it and getting it out there, and that's not intuitive, I think, because the way we consume music, we hear it. It's on the radio, it's on TV, yeah. And then we hear it more and more. So it feels like music is being sold to us. And I mean individual songs and artists. And then when you're on the other side of that and you realize, no, that person that appears to being sold to us has actually done all this work to put themselves in that position.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's A to B that nobody talks about. And then B to C is the actual transactional part of music that we see as consumers. Right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the process is you as well. It's kind of, I mean, certainly for me as a kind of middle-aged guy who'd never played live, and suddenly started writing some songs. And it was a complete, the first one I shared on social media by mistake, because I kind of recorded this song and Jane said, oh, stick it on SoundCloud. So I uploaded it, and unbeknown to me, you had to like uncheck this box, otherwise it would like plaster it all over your Facebook. And I was suddenly getting all these notifications. I was like, what's up with this? I'm like, oh my God, it's like post of the sun. Anyway, people were like complimentary. And so, yeah, it's kind of, I've forgotten what the original question was now after all of that, but it was.
Well, we were just talking about how easy we consume it and how hard it is to actually get it to that point. And there's some learnings in there when you decide you're going to market your own music, right?
Definitely. Yeah. And thanks for reminding me. It was like, I think you kind of set off, and I thought, and then suddenly everybody was like, oh, you've got to be on the kind of business side of it. And also I'm thinking, hang on a minute, I've just left all that behind. I just wanted to kind of play guitar and sing and write songs. I'm not really interested in being an accountant or into marketing and all this and then. But I think eventually you realize, you know, you've got it, that kind of comes with it. But that can be hard as well. I mean, really, at the end of the day, you've got to accept that, you know, music's a very subjective thing like life. And most, you know, you get an incredible amount of kind of knockbacks from people who, you know, you have to accept the majority of people ain't going to connect with what you're doing. And like it, you find the people who do. And certain things, it's I think a lot of it is the kind of growth in me as well, because things like playing live, I'd never done. And after I'd done the first song, I kind of had a guy from a little local radio station in Bolton said, oh, like, we'll do a bit of an interview on this Friday morning and you can play the song live on air. So I thought, yeah, so I kind of went and did it. Anyway, there's a band on the same show. And they were like, oh, we've got a gig in Manchester on the 23rd of April. Come and support us. And so, of course, I'm like, you know, the radio, I haven't got a lot of choice. I'm like, yeah, fine. But afterwards, suddenly I'm thinking, like, hang on a minute. I've never played live in front of people in my life, apart from in an orchestra when I used to play cello. And I'd be hidden behind a lot of other people playing other things. So it's something I've had to kind of come to, and there's no other way but to do it. So I've literally gone out and done kind of hundreds of open nights where, you know, you go and play three songs and you just get used to doing it, really. And
I think that's what you have to do, right? It's something that you have to meet head on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no, you can't think your way out of it. There's no, you know, there's no technique for what, you know, it is really dive in and do it. And I'm sure, you know, so yeah, I think, you know, I like to think we're kind of, I don't think you ever get to a point where you can say, yeah, I've done it. You know, we're always evolving, we're always learning and doing stuff. But I'm sure, you know, hopefully I'm at a far better place now than I was when I first started doing it.
And down that avenue, I'm thinking about your actual skills. You know, I play a little guitar, I strum along, and I love John Prine, but he plays all these arpeggios, and it's not just strumming. You can strum a John Prine song, and people will know what it is. But if you want to sound like John, you have to play it finger style with all these different little flourishes. When you're writing music, do you hear those flourishes in your head and you have to figure out, or is your skills commensurate with what you're thinking about?
Bits. I'm not by any means an accomplished guitarist. I mean, you know, I'm probably like you. I play chords. You know, I think my creativity is in kind of the ideas for the songs, really. I work with a producer who is far more talented at me in terms of musical production, and certainly as a guitarist, because he was a professional guitarist. So, you know, it is that those kind of things come. I do get bits of things, yeah. But I tend to start from a base of kind of writing a song with a few chords and strumming. And I think I've always taken the view that you can actually do that. You know, as long as you do it well, then that's, you know, you don't have to be a kind of virtuoso guitar player. It's kind of it's as much about the, you know, the method. There's, you know, some incredibly successful people who aren't, you know, that technically gifted. You know, it's not kind of Eric Clapton and these kind of things. You know, there are kind of bands who will kind of play that kind of stuff, and people like it probably for that reason. You know, I think it's,
yeah, well, I think there's like a fine line with your ability to write a strong song structure and have the melodies that are catchy enough. You don't have to be a virtuoso guitar player. And then there's also the other stuff where, you know, Yngwie Malmsteen and Joe Satriani blow you over with technical ability. And then you got to find that Eddie Van Halen guy who had the ability and this incredible, you know, knack for writing catchy music that satisfied the average listener, but made his virtuoso brain also, you know, satisfied. And I mean, those guys are, how many Eddie Van Halens are there, right?
We have, no, exactly. I mean, you just look at those people and you think, well, you know, they're up there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm down here and, you know, it's like I've the utmost respect for anybody who's, you know, that gifted and can do that. But I think, you know, you probably, if I were to set myself a target of being Eddie Van Halen, I mean, I'm probably setting myself up for a bit of disappointment, to be honest.
I'm gonna ask you about a couple of your songs. I've got some notes here. And it's because of the breadth. They're not all in the same vein. I've got Dark Streets and Beggars and Kings. They're kind of stark and minimal. But then a song like Chaos and Disorder has an incredible melody to it. And it's almost sweet. It's almost sweet to the taste on your ears, if that makes any sense. And I'm curious about, you know, you don't have hundreds of songs. You have tens of songs and you have that kind of variety. Is that something that you work towards, that you think is important in order for somebody to round out their I don't know what their catalog, or is this just what comes to you and that morning that's what came?
It was, and I think it's very, I kind of left, they're there as part of the process though, when, you know, because really I came from never having written a song in my mid-40s to suddenly kind of doing quite a few things over the last few years. And I think those were kind of very early. I think Chaos and Disorder was the first kind of song I did. which was, well, it was the first song I kind of recorded and put out. Dark Streets was something I wrote. It's kind of a metaphorical thing. It's actually based on a real place. It's actually based on a place called Ebden Bridge, which is kind of where I grew up. But there's a kind of metaphorical element to it as well. It's kind of this escape in a mindset. And it actually didn't have a chorus until I wrote the album, and we kind of looked at this song at the same time as well, and wrote, and we came up with this idea for writing the chorus, which was like the green hills that we run to with this, they're the kind of antidote to all this world of oppression and you know, stuck in this mindset. It was a bit of a personal thing as well, actually. I think there was an element of, you know, when I first started writing things, people would say, like, you're crazy, you know, and it's like, oh, why? You know, yeah. you do what you want. Why am I crazy? Why is it crazy? You know, to me, it was crazy not to do it, and so yeah, and it's I think they were. I mean, when I first went to record, I can't get the guy. I went into a commercial studio in Manchester, and the guy said, like, what do you want to do? And I said, well, I really want to record all these songs and maybe kind of make an album from them. And he said, well, what would you like it to be? And I kind of played through a few kind of ideas of what they were, and I said, well, I'd like it to be kind of a variety box of songs. And he was like, no, you can't do that, because you've got to, if you don't have a kind of set genre, you'll never get it out there. Radio won't play it. Listen, I'm thinking, well, why? I thought you're insane. It's like, I'm never going to get played on the radio. It's like, I'm just doing it for kind of fun. So it was like, I've tried to follow that path since. I think there always is a bit of a thread of a theme running through all the songs, but hopefully there is some, you know, I've done very different things. I've done things that are quite heavy, couple of things, and things that are very stripped back and very almost verging on classical. You know, probably is a symptom of kind of what I am, because I love, you know, I can get as much enjoyment out of listening to a bit of classical music as I can from, you know, listening to some heavy metal.
Right.
That is, my, you know, I don't limit myself to saying I like this, I don't like that. You know, I try and appreciate everything, really. Even if it's something that doesn't resonate with me, I'll still kind of listen to things and think, well, yeah, I may not get it, but obviously there's a lot of people out there in the world who do, and you can respect that, I think. So I always try and open myself up to that. So yeah, I think the world you live in, you can't really kind of reinvent yourself as a different kind of artist every week. So you have to have some kind of thread of similarity running through it. But I've tried to do something unique, really, rather than people always say, you know, how would you describe yourself, and you know, what, who are you similar to in style? And I always, it's a question I just, you know, kind of A, find really hard to answer, and B, I really want to answer, because I think, like, I'm hoping that I've, you know, created something that's me rather than the facsimile of anybody else.
Yeah. Why would you want to put a limit on what you can do? Let's, somebody else can do that, right?
Yeah. No, exactly. And I think it's, you know, the world, it's great. I know that's what human nature is, really. People like familiarity. So, you know, they want something that sounds like Oasis or that. But to me, I think, like, why would you not want something that was completely brand new? You know, bands like Oasis were successful, you know, because they were doing their own thing. People are successful for being them, not for being like anybody else, and kind of, you know, the great kind of carrot on a stick is that people see others being successful and they think, oh, that's the answer. I've got to be do it like them. But it isn't. They're actually successful, in my opinion, because they're actually just being their authentic self. You know, in a way, I think that's the key. It's just really to kind of be yourself, do something that's true to you. And then the hard bit is kind of standing firm on what you've done and kind of believing in that, really, which is a hard thing. That's been a hard part of the process as well, really, because it's an incredibly hard, you know, thing to do is to say, right, I've kind of made this and it's, you know, it's me and I don't really, as long as I believe in it, that's all that matters. And it's going, you know, that's kind of how it works, really. But it's
that's a great segue into kind of how I like to wrap the pod up, and I want to be respectful of your time. Yeah. Is, you know, I like to talk about what success looks like today and what you thought it might look like when you embarked upon this journey in 2014. And you know, you were talking a little bit about maybe what success is now, but what did you think success was going to be when you started on this?
I've never had expectations, because the awakening kind of does that to you. You realize that your prize in life isn't necessarily anything material. It's kind of, I always set my goal as being happiness, which sounds a bit bizarre, because obviously, you know, happiness is reliant on real things in the world as well. But you know, I think as long as you're enjoying it, and it's something that's fulfilling, and I think, you know, I'm still curious about writing songs, creating music. I think it's, you know, it's a wonderful thing when you write something down on a bit of paper with a few chords, and then suddenly it bursts into life as this song. So yeah, I think it's, you know, I think success is when, obviously, you know, everybody says, well, you know, it's for you and that, but yeah, we all want people to kind of listen to it and connect with it. But yeah, at the end of the day, as long as you're enjoying it, why not? You know, it's like, it's, I think that's the goal. You know, your primary goal should always be happiness.
The Second Act Podcast would like to thank Ben Sound for the intro and outro music, Happy Rock. We would also like to thank you for listening. If you enjoyed the podcast, please like, subscribe, and give us any feedback you can. Thanks for listening.